On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
If you look at the front page of the Sunday Independent, you see that the prognosis for air travel, even when international travel does come back, isn't great. Hugh O'Connell warning today in the Sunday Independent that in briefings given to ministers on Thursday night and again on Friday lunchtime, there's the risk of delays of up to 10 hours on arrivals in Dublin Airport because of the need for social distancing and because of the queues that might arise for validation of the European Digital COVID Certificate. All of that is within the general ambit of the Minister for Europe and Foreign Affairs, Thomas Byrne, who is with us now on the line. Thomas, thank you very much for taking our call this lunchtime, and thank you very much for speaking to us. Before we get to all of that, though, can I ask you about the scenes on South William Street last night and what you make of the reports of large crowds there?
Well, look, I mean, I certainly respect what the chief medical officer says. I think, you know, he's highly respected. People trust what he says. And to be honest, I think that he has a point. I've never been into criticism myself of what's going on and when people make mistakes with COVID rules, never, because it's very, very difficult for all of us to comply with the rules. But there's no doubt that in terms of travel restrictions, in terms of what we can do, they are hugely dependent on COVID numbers. And when large crowds gather, there's no doubt that COVID will spread. So I have some sympathy. I think it's obviously very difficult at the moment where the weather is very hot. People undoubtedly want to get out to enjoy themselves and premises aren't open. Now, outdoor dining is going to open the week after next and then indoor after that. And I think we just need all of us, as best we can, I suppose, a type of strategic patience to make sure we can continue to get numbers down, which are stubbornly... Yes, which are stubborn and stubbornly saying the same, in order that then we can ensure that everything opens up in accordance to plan as we continue that vaccine.
Obviously, nobody would encourage or nobody would support any reckless behaviour. But what about the argument that a lot of what people were doing last night was just meeting up in small gatherings, except there was a large number of small gatherings, and that this is really just a formalised situation of what you're going to have in 8 days' time when beer gardens reopen anyway. There's going to be that volume of people sitting outside in organised ways.
And again, I'm not going to criticise that. I just think we all of us have to be as careful as possible, particularly over the next few weeks. We're you know, the vaccine rollout is going so well. I think it's going to continue to go well. And I just think we need that bit of patience, because what we don't want to happen is we don't want to go back on what we've announced already, which, you know, is always a risk when there's variants, etc. But I think we reduce that risk by being as careful as possible. But I think...
Sorry to interrupt. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But what I was going to just ask you was, do you think that there might be a slight disconnect between what the public considers to be an outdoor summer and the vision of an outdoor summer that government and Evitt might have had?
No, look, I don't think so. I mean, I think the public have been so good for well over a year, and it's been really, really difficult for all of us. And I think people have been affected in various ways by this pandemic. So I think it's only entirely natural that people want to go out to meet, particularly on such a beautiful day and evening as it was yesterday. But I still think that as best we can, to be as careful as possible in how we meet in terms of social distance, are there other places we can go where there mightn't be such big crowds if we want to talk to people and comply with rules. And I think it will be worth it to ensure that we don't reverse in anything over the coming weeks and months.
You mentioned people wanting to go out and to meet with each other, and obviously there'll be a lot of people very gleefully eyeing up the prospect of international travel, not only for tourism but for family reunions and the like as well, when the green cert kicks in about 6 or 7 weeks' time. Can you talk us through, first of all, how exactly the green cert is going to work, or how exactly people will be able to enrol for it, or how all that's going to be rolled out?
Well, look, there's huge work underway at the moment across government on this. The digital COVID cert now has been agreed in principle between the European Parliament and the member states. Now, it hasn't just been formally put into effect yet, but it will be in place by the 1st of July. And then member states have a 6 weeks period. We're going to take 19 days. So we're going to set it up on the 19th of July. But it'll be basically an app on your phone or a piece of paper. And it will have three certificates on it. One is the certificate of vaccination. Two is the testing certificate, and three is the recovery certificate. To be very, very clear, the digital COVID cert is a document, whether it's an online document or a paper document. The use of that document then is a matter generally for the individual member states. But the whole point of the document is to facilitate that free movement across the European Union. And you're right, Gavin, it is partially about tourism, But there's lots of people need to move for many other reasons other than tourism who've been prevented from moving over the last year. And I think there's no doubt this will facilitate that in the best and most efficient possible way.
So one of the ways in which you can qualify for it is that if you have recently recovered from COVID, is there going to be a standardised European definition of how recently you've had to have COVID before you're eligible for that?
I think those individual rules are a matter for individual member states. And this is the only difficulty with this system. I mean, it depends on your own country and the rules that are there and the country that you want to visit. We're going to try and have, as best possible coordination of that. There is going to be a council recommendation. Maybe the old traffic light system could come back and be refined in June. Let's hope that that happens. But that would be a recommendation. And we saw previously with the traffic light system that member states very, very quickly across Europe changed it, refined it, or did their own thing. Now, as vaccinations progress and as hopefully numbers go down, I think that's less and less likely. And it is likelier that we will have a common set of standards. Mm. But as we speak today, there are different rules on all those things and as to what is acceptable in each individual member state.
If the traffic light system is adopted again or is refined in some way, does that mean then that even if there is still some sort of notionally harmonised way that you can travel across Europe, that there still could be different conditions depending on where your destination is?
Well, I think the European Commission will accept them only if they're justifiable on health grounds. So they won't accept them for other reasons. So I think previously when we had the third wave there at Christmas, withdrawals from that or changes from that by individual member states were accepted because we're in a very, very dangerous health situation, including ourselves, but every country. And some of them had actually harsher restrictions than us on travel. But that situation, I think, has changed. And I think as the health situation improves, as vaccinations go up, there'd be far less justification for that. So I can't see that happening to the same extent as it happened last Christmas.
The Sunday Independent is telling us today in a report from Hugh O'Connell that ministers were advised at the Cabinet Subcommittee on Thursday night and again at the full Cabinet on Friday that there's the possibility of there being delays of up to 10 hours in Dublin Airport arising from some of the checks that might be needed when tourism does return. Can you stand over that report, or do you know exactly how those delays might arise?
Well, obviously, I wasn't a cabinet, but what I can say is that if we didn't have the digital COVID cert, I can absolutely see how those delays would happen, because what's happening at airports across Europe at the moment, where there is some travel going on for essential purposes, is people are showing a piece of paper or maybe an email. People are looking at it. People are querying whether this is the correct certificate or the correct letter or the correct test result. And I think that there I see massive scope for delay. But at least with the digital COVID cert, when that comes through, there's a standardised way of looking at these things. And it's a very simple extra check, just like your passport or your boarding pass. And it's in a standard form. And I think that actually is the best potential of the COVID cert, actually, is to reduce delay and to bring some standardisation.
Does it sound like to you that the idea of 10-hour delays is kind of premised on the organisation that there is now, but not on the harmony that there might be from the cert kicking in?
Well, I could definitely see that happening before the cert kicked in, absolutely, because obviously I have been to Brussels as part of my role as Minister of European Affairs. I've been in airports in a number of countries trying to get to Brussels because the connections are very poor at the moment. And it is chaotic in some sense in terms of people looking around for scraps of paper. And I've heard MEPs saying that as well. So yes, in that context, I could see delays, but I would hope with the COVID cert and that would just be a very, very simple extra check. And most people, quite frankly, would put it on their phone. And I think it'll be very easy to do.
But given, as you said, that some people will be able to present it on paper, is there a danger that all of this could become a bit of a morass, that people will have this idea that air travel will be back to what it was and that they'll just be able to show their digital cert in the same way that they show a boarding pass or that they show a passport and they should be able to glide on through? And that actually, given all the different discrepancies between how individual countries will apply it and the prospect of people showing up with it all on paper, that it could actually become this huge bureaucratic nightmare in every terminal in the world.
Well, I don't see that. As long as case numbers go down and as long as vaccinations increase, which is going to happen. So at the moment, certainly there are different rules in every member state and you have to navigate. So if we can get them harmonised to the greatest extent possible over the next month or so, I think that will reduce the scope for delays. But always member states on public health grounds will retain those rights to themselves. So in terms of children, in terms of what you need in terms of vaccination, in terms of what you need in terms of testing, those rules are all different at the moment, almost in every member state. So the more harmonisation we can get, I think the better.
Might there be some discussions kind of on the margins between member states as to how to better to coordinate these things or to have them as harmonised as is possible?
Well, the French government has invited health ministers and European affairs ministers from other neighbouring countries, including Ireland, as we neighbour them in terms of a sea boundary, to a meeting, a virtual meeting on Tuesday morning. So we've yet to receive the agenda for that, but I think they're looking at travel restrictions, the health situation, and travel into the EU as well. So we certainly go to that meeting in a very productive and cooperative way. We've very good relations with the French government, so we'll see what comes out of that. I think it'll be a good opportunity to share knowledge and to share knowledge of what they're actually planning for the next few weeks and months. All of those countries are very affected by tourism, it has to be said.
Might there be scope, if this is a meeting of France and its neighbours, might there be scope at some other point before too long to start inviting British ministers to this? Because obviously we don't know whether there might be an emergency brake applied on Britain, and a lot of people in Ireland would dearly like to know if they can have travel over and back to Britain again.
Well, this meeting has been organised by the French government, so it's not directly on our interest, but there is constant contact between the Irish and the British government on a range of issues, including travel. And I think we clearly want to open up travel with Britain again, but we look at the situation with the variant, and we do have to be really, really careful. I mean, that Indian variant in Britain is now dominant. So, you know, I'm not one for scaremongering about variants, etc., but we do have to be very, very careful, because we don't want to go back and reverse back, as has happened in parts of Britain already. Mm. And there was a bit of confusion about that, a bit of in and out as to whether cities were locked down or not, or whether you could travel to cities. But it just shows you that even in a country which has very high rates of vaccination, and fair play to them in Britain, there is still concern about variants and about the spread of COVID. Now, what we have to our advantage in this country is an extremely high take-up of vaccines. And I think we don't give ourselves enough credit that when we put the call out for vaccines, the people who register, it's a very, very high proportion. Mm. And that then is protecting everybody. We don't have groups of communities or whatever in Ireland who are unvaccinated when their age group has been called out.
Yeah.
And I think that's really helpful to us.
Given that it's going to be up to the EU centrally now, or to the ECDC, to decide when emergency breaks might apply to other inbound travel from non-EU countries, is there the prospect that we will actually lose control over implementing the common travel area or not? Because it'll be up to Brussels, won't it, rather than us, to decide whether there should be inhibitions on people coming from Britain?
No, the common travel area is a separate issue for us. In terms of travel into the European Union, because they're from outside the European Union, obviously they're part of most of the rest of the European Union has the Schengen area.
Yeah.
We're not part of the Schengen area because of the common travel arrangement. So what the government has said is that we will broadly align with rules about coming into the European Union, but we're not actually technically part of them.
So
only because of the common travel area.
So if an emergency break applies to travel into the Schengen area, that we might still, in circumstances, decide that it should be okay for people from Britain to come in without any extra...
That'll be entirely a matter for us, but let's not forget, at Christmas, we banned travel from Britain for 4 days. So these things work every way, and it depends on the health situation. But it's difficult to foresee that with the rate of vaccinations. But look, we'll always retain power in the grounds of public health.
One other issue to talk to you before we let you go. I know you were watching the Andrew Marr programme on BBC this morning, and you would have seen the new DUP leader, Edwin Poots, and the European Commissioner, Maris Sefcovic, talking about concerns around the protocol and the likes. And the Commissioner, Sefcovic, suggested that maybe to get around some of the difficulties that are there, that Northern Ireland could sign up to some sort of Swiss-style accord where there might be common standards on food or on animal health, for example. Here is a little bit of what Edwin Poots had to say in response.
That struck me as a temporary solution. I want permanent solutions. And the permanent solution is to take the barriers away between Great Britain and Northern Ireland and provide security in terms of the single market, that goods that are entering the European Union from Great Britain have the appropriate checks.
So basically a semi-open border going forward in perpetuity for goods, even if that means some risk to the single market.
I believe that we can eradicate virtually all of the risks to the single market by having checks on the goods that are going to the European Union based in Northern Ireland. Mm. That deals with the single market issue, and it still allows all of the food, all of the medicines that are travelling to Northern Ireland from Great Britain to arrive without huge costs, £25 million of cost per year, being added to the public purse.
So Edward Poots there telling Andrew Marr that what he would like is to protect the single market but not impede trade going between Britain and Northern Ireland by simply checking stuff after it has landed into Northern Ireland and only subjecting it to checks if it's going to be imported inwards into the Republic and then to the European single market. Thomas Byrne, is there any problem with that?
Well, look, the protocol does exactly what we wanted to do and what the British and Irish governments and the European Union wanted to do, which is to protect the peace process, ensure no hard border on the island of Ireland, and protect the single market. And they're all really important to us. So we have that solution. You know, Northern Ireland is not about putting in place the wishes of one community. It's about putting in place the compromise wishes of the entire communities of Northern Ireland. The protocol is a compromise. The Good Friday Agreement is a compromise. And we're now currently in talks about how to, I suppose, compromise on the implementation of the protocol. And a huge amount of work has been done by Maros Sefcovic and the European Union and to address genuine concerns that people have.
Is there scope in those talks for there to be checks on land so that you wouldn't necessarily have to have checks at seaports, but you could check stuff after it arrives to check whether it should be allowed to go onwards again?
No, like, the truth is that there's a huge amount of checks going on at the moment at Larne and Belfast ports. And very little disruption to supply. Like, we're hearing a lot of anecdotes. We're hearing a lot of statements about how there's going to be food shortages or how there have been food shortages or how business can't cope. We heard on the programme this morning that people hate the protocol. Yeah. I mean, all of these assertions are baseless. Supermarkets are full. They're full of products, mainly from Northern Ireland and from the Republic of Ireland. Let's be honest, if anyone visits a supermarket in the north of Ireland, there are some restrictions on some type of food products, and there are more checks, obviously, on plants and animals. Now, what Maros Sefcovic has offered, the European Union has offered, is an SPS agreement, not just for Northern Ireland, but actually for the entire of the United Kingdom. And it would solve all the problems that the fishers have in the UK, that the sheep farmers have. It would reduce the checks to the bare minimum, not just between Northern Ireland and Britain, but between Britain and the European Union, where there have been huge delays as well and huge costs to business. And by the way, we in the Republic of Ireland have the exact same issues as Northern Ireland without the extensions that they've had. And I haven't seen shortages in our supermarkets. I haven't seen difficulties with food supply. These things simply haven't happened. But where there are difficulties, where they've been acknowledged by the European Union and they are being worked on, the issues such as guide dogs, there are many other issues that are, you know, not of huge importance to the overall single market question that can be resolved and will be resolved. But it must be in the spirit of talks and compromise to ensure that we do really get that best of both worlds for Northern Ireland business people.
Okay, we'll hear what the UUP leader, Doug Beattie, has to say about that in just a moment. But for now, Minister of State for European Affairs and TD for Meath East, Thomas Byrne, thank you very much for joining us on The Record this lunchtime.